Logan's secrets to an effective video. I mean, number one, it starts with story. I think it starts with story. Maybe even before story, it's what is the goal? Mm-hmm. What are you looking to get out of this? I also think a lot about the funnel. So, and that's something that I think is not something that video producers are always thinking about, is do they have a philosophy? Do they have a mentality of what the sales funnel is? And when we're thinking about content, let's think about what is top of the funnel content versus mid funnel content versus bottom of funnel content.
Welcome to the Small Business Storyteller Show, the podcast designed to learn from the successes and the failures of small businesses making an impact. My name is Seth Silvers, and after 4 years of helping small businesses learn to market with stories, I've learned that someone might be selling something similar to you, but nobody, absolutely no one, can compete with your stories. This show is dedicated to diving into the one thing that makes every small business unique, their story, and learning from the good and the hard parts. If you see business as a tool for good, and you want to learn from others who believe the same, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Small Business Storyteller Show. Welcome back, everybody, to the Small Business Storytellers. Today, I'm excited because we sit down with Logan Hale in B3 Media. I've known Logan since I started StoryOn 4 years ago, and have pretty much just known that you guys are extremely well respected in the marketing and video community. So I'm excited to learn a little bit more into that. Most of the people we've had on the podcast have been in very separate industries than StoryOn. So cool. This is kind of like a treat for us to get to sit down with the Logan.
Thank you. I'm super happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. To start, share with us a little bit about like V3. Mm-hmm. And what is V3 Media? Give us some context just for kind of where you guys are at today.
Sure. I'll start with the name. The three V's in V are video strategy, video production, video distribution. And a lot of that's important because I think in our business, the focus is really on production. There isn't always the ability to focus on strategy and distribution and where the video is going to go. So that's been something that I think has been a differentiator for us and something that, you know, I'm really passionate about. As a company, been around for about 10 years. Moved to Fort Collins about 5 or 6 years ago. Started in Los Angeles. Started out as a team of one. Now we're a team of 4.5. So there's 4 of us in the office every day and then a kind of halftime permalancer that helps with sales. So now we've got a full-time project manager, which has been a level up, a full-time video predator, producer editor, if you're interested.
Yeah, I hear a lot of like combined terms yeah. that you guys have invented over there.
full-time digital marketer helping us and clients kind of figure out, yeah, how do you launch that video? How do you distribute that video? And then myself just juggling different plates and helping keeping things going. Most of my focus is on business development, sales, making sure we've got cool projects to work on that keep us all busy. And I just say there's a fierce focus on kind of differentiating ourselves in the video production space, in the video marketing space. It's a crowded space with different types of companies and different levels of companies, whether it's somebody banging it out, you know, from coffee shops or from home, or companies our size or companies larger. And, you know, when it comes to production, I think there's also a little bit of a fierce fear in that it can be kind of a race to the bottom of the budget barrel. Mm-hmm. And so to stay different, unique, to offer different services, I think that's what's going to keep us kind of healthy as a business.
Yeah. That's great. You said 10 years, which is impressive in any industry, but I feel like especially in the media space.
Yeah.
How did this all start for you?
Oh, gosh.
And what was some of your, like, what was some of your experience kind of before?
Sure. I'll go from the start.
Please.
So I grew up in San Diego in high school, did a lot of video production. Back then it was a lot of tape to tape. That will instantly age me a bit. and then I moved to Los Angeles. I went to UCLA. I went to UCLA Film School. Got kind of a professional education there. Then I elevated from actual tape to actual film. So got a great education, built a great network, but at the same time, like, kind of left in 99 with learning to edit on a flatbed rather than the nonlinear editor systems that were just kind of popping out in 99. And then from there, kind of was, you know, looking to be the next Quentin Tarantino, writing screenplays, trying to get into film at the time, a time when you couldn't just pick up a DSLR and you couldn't just pick up a MacBook to shoot and edit like you can today. Right. You had to, you know, rent tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of gear and, you know, mount a real crew, and couldn't do a lot of one-man band stuff back then. I got out of UCLA, was doing odd jobs in film, wasn't really finding, you know, great work that was I was passionate about. Found myself in New York in April of 2001, going to a friend's wedding, and ended up, the bride-to-be somehow hooked me up with a job on the first Spider-Man, and next thing I know, I was working on Spider-Man, and then A Beautiful Mind, and then different music videos, and next thing I know, it's like October 2001, like 6 or 7 months later, and I hadn't even been back to LA, but I came back, grabbed my stuff, and officially moved to New York. And the kind of pivotal moment in New York was, I was on this track in film and wasn't always feeling very inspired or very connected to the work I was doing. And a lot of times I was working on films that, you know, wouldn't come out for 9 months or maybe not even at all, you know, as these indies. And then I was there during September 11th when on 9/11, you know, the towers came down, and I was about 20, 30 blocks away in the Flatirons. And at that time, the film industry, which was very small in New York at the time, it just kind of collapsed. I think a lot of different industries like went into kind of a weird mode, but you're in New York, you still need to pay rent and hustle. And so I found myself getting a job with this event marketing company. And so then from 2001 to 2008, I was all in on event marketing and experiential marketing. And I loved it. I was having a blast. Definitely leveled up you know, my professional experience outside of what I was doing, just like on set or, you know, in coffee shops writing screenplays. And it had an immediate satisfaction because I felt like I was creating these like live mini movies. They had an audience, they had talent, they had a story, but they kind of came and they went and they happened. And I was doing that for companies for a long time, and then went out on my own and had a good business going on my own, 2007, 2008, until we hit that that Lehman Brothers financial crash towards the end of 2008. And at that time, I felt like I couldn't even get a job on Craigslist, like, you know, carrying a catering tray. So my kind of inspiration to stay in the event marketing world kind of started to disappear. And it was right around the time that my first daughter was born. And it was right around the time in 2008 when more and more businesses were using YouTube. And we had just gotten a camera from our in-laws to, you know, film our little daughter. And so I was picking up a camera again for the first time in many, 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 many years. And, you know, had my first MacBook and was hopping on to Final Cut and just making little movies of her, and then had friends who were starting their businesses and they wanted to get into video, and so I was just kind of helping them out. You know, again, I had a good amount of time on my hands as I was kind of hustling and figuring out what I was going to do next, and I was just loving getting back into video and, you know, telling stories, whether it was of my kids or helping kind of bumble around and kind of dust off the old film school skills and create these videos for my friends that had businesses. And then from there, 2009, 2010, 2011, it just kind of leveled up. I was doing this, I just kind of stumbled into it. I wasn't expecting to, and was kind of working out of my dining room, you know, talking with my wife. Is this a business? Is this not a business?
Right.
But kept at it. And
were you like making money from it at the time, or was that kind of like a side hustle?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was very incremental, and I would say it was definitely 2009 was more side hustle, and then it just kind of built in as I was like growing my skills and growing my portfolio and starting to work with people that weren't just my friends. And then I was kind of started to figure it out and apply the skills that I had used building a business in event marketing towards, you know, video marketing and video production, and then started to hire out so I could free up more of my time to go focus on sales by hiring an editor to help edit and help production while I was out trying to hustle and find more business. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of leveled up, you know, inch by inch. But I'd say the pivotal moment was 2013 when we left LA and moved to Fort Collins. You know, we weren't interested in raising two little girls in the hustle and bustle, right, of Los Angeles. And so we had stumbled on, you know, wonderful Fort Collins, and, you know, year after year, I was looking, you look in Fast Company or Inc. magazine, you see Colorado, Colorado, Colorado on the rise, and being just an hour from Denver was like, you know, Santa Monica to Pasadena to me.
Right.
So, landed in Fort Collins and found a community here, and there was definitely a little bit of starting from scratch, but by that point I already had a book of business that was in Los Angeles that I was still able to service. We were editing from here. I could pop out there to shoot or have somebody else that I was already working with shoot, and then worked on, you know, building a book of business here in Colorado.
So how has I love your story, because I feel like a huge percentage of the people doing video work now have like picked up a DSLR in the last handful of years. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the beauty of it. But I also think that, like, I mean, it's pretty amazing how long you've been doing video.
Yeah.
Of sorts. What's the, talk to us about the difference between producing a like 5-minute video now versus 20 years ago for all the people listening that they shoot on their DSLR, they put it into their MacBook. Like, just for people that have no idea what it took to produce a video back then.
I mean, I guess the best way I could say it in the most succinct way is just like the Gutenberg printing press versus Google Docs. You know, seriously, it is amazing, and we're seeing it with, you know, we see it with music, we see it with writing, we see it in all these creative mediums. You know, I was always, you know, jealous of somebody that was able to pick up a guitar and just start playing, or, you know, you're able to pick up a pen and just start writing. And I do feel like it's more and more that way, whether it's the camera we have in our phone or even the DSLR. And, you know, more and more when we shoot professionally, we gear up. So we might have a DSLR, but we're putting a cage on it. We're putting camera support and, you know, lavs like you have here, and just to increase the production quality. But yeah, I would say back in the day, you know, I was like in high school, it was, I guess in high school we had, you know, we did have those video cameras. It was just like the resolution wasn't,
right,
you know, it was good enough for us at the time. But I guess it was very akin to, you know, being able to pick up a camera and shoot. The editing got a little funky with, you know, tape to tape. But yeah, now it's just amazing what we can do with, you know, a laptop.
Yeah. I guess, was it easy for you to like, not jump on the bandwagon, but when you saw just like the technology changing and it kind of becoming, not that it's easy, but easier.
Yeah.
Or was there some like resistance for you of like wanting to keep doing it the old way with like big production and bigger shoots, or was it easier for you to get smaller and stuff?
Oh, I mean, to me, it's just, it's access.
Yeah.
And so you know, fascinating when all of a sudden millions of people have the access to, you know, record an album in their bedroom, or, you know, or record a what hopefully looks and feels like a production video quality mm-hmm. with something that they can get in Best Buy. And so I was definitely part of that movement that was picking up Canon 5Ds. And I definitely interacted with the old guard that I hadn't been connected to, because, you know, I went to film school and never really connected with that. You know, in the 80s, 90s, and I guess 2000s, there were, and to a degree still are, these kind of, these video production companies that did use $100,000 Avid editors and did have big funky cameras and video. And it, you know, we see all those kind of those mm-hmm. old school 80s, 90s videos, and they were able to charge a really high margin on them because a lot of people didn't have access to that equipment. And I definitely felt some of the stink eye from some of those folks that had been able to, you know, build really big, healthy businesses because they had that gear that others didn't have. And then all right. of a sudden, but then from there, it's like, what do you do with that access? Yeah, anybody can record a podcast, anybody can record an album, anybody can record a video, but yeah, what do you put into it? How do you level it up? Whether it's creatively or logistically with production, that's where my mind started to go, and how do I turn it into a business that's going to feed this family? That's kind of where my mind started to go quickly once I decided to jump in.
Was there a moment, like, were you a kid or teenager when you realized that film was the direction that you wanted to go?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember the camera I got, or I stole from my father. You know, he got it with ambitions of shooting family home videos, and me and my cousins took it and started just, you know, making our own. I mean, we were 8, 9, 10 years old, you know, making our own versions of, like, the TV shows that we watched. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I was super fascinated by it and knew pretty early on that I wanted to, you know, make TV. I was a kid pretty much raised by a lot of TV. And then it was in high school when I started to discover Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino, and then that went from, you know, wanting to produce, you know, funny little videos to
right.
you know, film. And yeah. then I became, you know, a film school nerd and you know, put on the beret and got really heady about you know, what was cinema. And but then from, you know, 2001, when I left it and got into event marketing and started to really dig that business, I was really disconnected from it. And so when I picked up a camera just to really shoot home videos again with mm-hmm. my daughter, and then when it turned into filming recording videos for people's business, I was just having a blast. So I was having a fun time, and mm-hmm. and but yeah, definitely different today than it was even back in 2008, 2009.
Right. I know that films, I love that you went to film school, and I know that I feel like film school probably serves, it's different now than it was then, in a sense that I'm sure then, and also for the people not looking at Logan is not old. He's just been, you've just been doing video stuff for longer than most of us. But I feel like back then it was probably hard to get into video if you didn't go to film school.
Yeah, because it is interesting to think back then, or, you know, what was film versus what was video, or what it mm-hmm. today is film versus video. And I think that they've really, you know, merged. I would imagine that people in the 90s and 2000s that were getting into video, producing videos for, I guess, commercials, yeah, you know, it is the I get a little stuck on the concept of commercial video versus corporate video. Like commercial video, as we see it on TV, what we see on cable, That is an industry, you know, things done by with very large budgets, usually through ad agencies and very large video production companies. I think that industry still exists in a way that it existed 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and 30 years ago.
Right.
Now, the corporate industry, where we'd be able to make a video for a cupcake shop down the street, you wouldn't be really able to do that 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Like, a cupcake shop wouldn't be able to, but now maybe they're doing it themselves. Maybe they have a friend or a cousin or a nephew or a niece that has a camera and has an interest. Now that cupcake shop can have a video, and, or they can pull out their iPhone or smartphone and make a video, and that's access, and that's awesome.
So speaking of access, I love what you just mentioned with mentioning that people actually can pull out their phone and do a video. I think something really big shifted, even though I never really cared for Snapchat. I feel like Snapchat shifted things with video a ton, because before that, I feel like as consumers, our expectation of quality for videos was like maybe only produce one a year.
Right.
But it's got to be produced. Like it's got to be nice. It's got to look really good. And then Snapchat and Insta Stories came out, and I can't really explain it, but I feel like in our brains we like shifted, like consumer behavior shifted to where I kind of want to see more of your life. Like I want to see behind the scenes. I want to see on the go. And it's not that quality isn't important to us, but it's just like it's really shifted. So how do you think, like the some of these newer like apps or newer, I guess, ways to interact with social media, how has that shifted like the video industry? Because the reality is the best thing for a cupcake shop down the street probably is to like use their phone every day and make some videos. Like there's some businesses that that's real for. So like, has that hurt the video, the like more produced video industry or has it helped it? And kind of, what do you think about that?
I've got a lot of thoughts. Where do I start? I think the place where I start and the thing I've been thinking about a lot is what is video? Like, you know, seriously, is video 16:9? Is video 1:1? Is video 4:5? And I guess like cupcakes, there's a lot of different cupcakes you can make. There isn't just one. Has it hurt a business like mine? I don't think so, because maybe to, you know, continue with the analogy, if we're talking cupcakes, I guess we make wedding cakes, and sometimes they're one tier, sometimes they're two tiers, three tiers, five tiers.
Right.
And it's a particular type of experience and type of product that is hard for, I think, marketing teams or individuals to produce on their own. But talking about that cupcake shop owner or that entrepreneur, that small business owner that is able to take out their phone and produce a vertical video or, you know, a landscape video 16:9, I think it's awesome, and what I dig about it, and actually I think there's an ability to expand my service offerings to clients to not just produce videos, but now help consult and get into what is the strategy and what is the distribution, maybe not necessarily with a cupcake shop owner, but with a software technology firm that I might work with, or an agriculture firm, or a chemical manufacturer that I might work with. And those folks are probably less apt to really want to take out their phones and produce that type of content. But sometimes they do, and I encourage it because they can be more authentic with that content than I probably ever could be breaking out the big cameras. Now, what I could do is I could help guide them on what stories they could tell and what kind of authenticity they could have. So like, for example, if we think of a CPG, consumer packaged goods manufacturer, food manufacturer, and you know, what's the user experience when they see that professionally produced $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 video with that interview with the CEO. And where's that going to go? And what's the point of that video? And what's the point of spending all that money and all that time? And we can get into why they might be motivated to do that, versus the CEO being able to pull out their phone and authentically talk about their product, talk about their thought leadership, and do it just themselves without anybody around, and definitely without a big professional crew around that could be distracting them from delivering authenticity. So I lean into what's possible. What my take on it would just be, depending on what the goals of the business are, and then from there, what their marketing goals are, what should they be investing in, whether it's video or photography, and how can we help them use the best tools to meet their goals?
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's a really good way of putting it, because I do think everybody's needs are different. You and I have had conversations before about the challenge in the storytelling industry of producing this beautiful story, whether it's a video or written form or a photo, and then you hand it to the client, this baby that you've spent hours and hours.
Video
and
babies.
you hand the baby to the client, and you know, they put it on their about page of their website, and they say, hey, we're doing storytelling. And then, like, they don't get the results that they want with it, because they're expecting, like, hey, we're doing storytelling. So,
we did it.
All these people are going to come, and they're going to buy from us because of our story. And they have all these expectations, and it doesn't happen. And then it's kind of not good for anybody, because the client is not that happy. Right. Because their video that you made didn't get them the results, so they're not going to rehire you. And then you're not happy because the client's not happy. Right. So, like, and it's the challenge of producing a story and not knowing what to do with it. And right. You mentioned at the beginning, like, it's one of the V's.
Yeah.
Is, like, distribution and strategy. How are you guys addressing that, rather than just making these video babies that you pass on to clients and kind of say, two thumbs up.
Yeah.
Go for it.
We're addressing it head on. It's from the start of the conversation. And that's new. I would say that's something that's been more at the forefront of the conversation in the past 18 months, maybe totally. 2 years.
I would agree.
And it's an education process. And sometimes they bite, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they buy in, and sometimes they don't. I'll say, for the client and even for us, when we see these beautiful little video babies put in the corner, you know, of the website, and they're not getting the traffic and they're not being used, yeah, you're right. As you said, nobody wins. And so it's been a part of the education process. I call it the launch plan. What's the launch plan? What's the launch plan? And what's fascinating about working with different marketers is that there is a certain inertia or momentum to, if they're producing a new product, they wouldn't produce it without a launch plan. Mm-hmm. Or even if they're gonna create a landing page, or they're gonna create a white paper, then there's probably a whole plan in place of how they're gonna distribute that white paper. But video is an odd thing where people tend to think, I think it can be a lot like websites. Like with websites, I think there are, you know, marketers or company owners out there that are like, I'm going to make my website and everybody's going to come to it, mm-hmm. and business is going to be booming. And I think there's something similar there with video. All we have to do is produce the video, and that's it. And so how are we addressing it? We're addressing it head on. We're addressing it early on. It's getting to the point where it's getting to the point where either this year or next year, I won't even produce a video if it doesn't have a plan.
Yeah, I was curious, like, is the strategy and, like, launch plan piece, like, is that an add-on, or is that a, like, requirement? Like, this is built into everything we do.
I'd say built in. The only caveat to that would be, hey, we're producing a 6-minute HR onboarding video. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't need a launch plan.
Internal purposes.
And then also, I would say, when I do implement that, I think it'll be with new clientele. Existing clientele, where we already have that relationship and we've already done that discovery, if we end up doing something really quick and really nimble that's mm-hmm. smaller in scope, and they already have a foundation of video content, and hopefully they already have a foundation of a mechanism to distribute that content and get it out to people, then great, we're ready to go. But if it's new clientele, then I've just seen it time and time again. If they're just looking to check a box and check that video box because they went to a conference or they heard from their higher ups they need video, and nobody's really inspired exactly on what to do with it, and they're just looking to check a box, I don't think that we'll probably work with them unless we can kind of feel them out, push some buttons, and see, hey, there's another way, or there's more things that we can do. And it kind of goes back to that concept of, you know, what is a video? And it's not necessarily always putting it on them. I think it's also putting it on us as people that are swimming in video 24/7, 365, where it's an education process, and we can be value adds by saying, hey, when we deliver the video to you, without even putting it in the proposal or you thinking about it, we're also going to be delivering you a little GIF. And it's going to be a little GIF with a little magical circle and a magical triangle that just makes people like instantly want to click it. And so instead of you sending out through Salesforce to your list an ugly, you know, 40 character jumbled link that says, hey, mm-hmm. watch this, you've got a GIF that maybe you wouldn't have thought to make yourselves, that you can just so easily just drop into an email campaign and now inspire somebody to click and watch and interact and engage with that video. And that's just one little example of probably dozens that we kind of have in our back pockets, where we're looking to do little things to help make sure that that video gets that return on investment that they want and they need and we want and we need.
Yeah, that's great. Is there some like key components that you would say are, I guess, what would like Logan's secrets to an effective video be?
Logan's secrets to an effective video. Number one. good question. Which anytime you hear somebody say good question, they're usually trying to buy some time in answering it properly. But so here's how I would take on that question, and I think you'll appreciate this. I mean, number one, it starts with story. I think it starts with story. Maybe even before story, it's what is the goal? Mm-hmm. What are you looking to get out of this? I also think a lot about the funnel. So, and that's something that I think is not something that video producers are always thinking about. Do they have a philosophy? Do they have a mentality of what the sales funnel is? And when we're thinking about content, let's think about what is top of the funnel content versus mid funnel content versus bottom of funnel content. So, if I'm thinking about the intention of what makes an effective video, if I'm thinking about top of the funnel content, then I'm thinking, what's going to turn heads? What's going to make people lean in? That's mm-hmm. where I'm going to advise somebody, don't pull out that iPhone to create that top of the funnel content, you know, unless it might be, I mean, sometimes I see like ads on YouTube for like herbal supplements where it's right. just somebody that has enough of, you know, they're probably spending $40,000 a month on YouTube ads and they spent $4 right. on the video. But the type of clients that we work with, which are typically B2B, a lot of hardware, software, a lot of food and beverage, you know, fairly big businesses that have decent sized marketing teams, if it's top of the funnel content and we're talking about what's effective, number one, it's what's going to turn heads, but then who's the audience? So what's going to turn the heads of somebody that might be interested in, you know, buying a beer or a soda is different from somebody that might be interested in buying a new enterprise software platform. And then I think the question goes into, well, where's the video going to go? If this video is really just built to play in a sales presentation or send out through, you know, Salesforce to kind of have people check it out, and hopefully you interrupt their day so mm-hmm. that they take notice and engage with it and want to click whatever the next step is. So, yeah, what's right. the next step? And then, I mean, it's a heady topic of what's effective, but I would just say it's interesting to me when I think about the funnel and I think about when we're top of the funnel and when we're top of the funnel, people were kind of at the storefront level. You know, we're just trying to attract people to stop walking down Main Street and look and actually notice us and even think about, am I going to walk through that door? Or am I going to just at least gaze at the window to see who they are and what they do for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds? This right. is what we do when we're walking down Main Street and we make decisions. I've got a place to go, but ooh, wow, this is something new. This is something attractive. This seems to be in line with what I want. But then we're in the door. So once we're in the door, what's happening? Say if we go back to that cupcake shop example, are we meeting the employees? Now are we in the about us section? Now when we're trying to create an effective video, a compelling video, then can we go deeper? And then bottom of funnel, I think, is where you start to do product demos and you're maybe doing less about story as the attraction tool, and you can go kind of deeper into, you know, product features, attributes, benefits, mm-hmm. demos, more, you know, in depth with who the people are. I guess I would end that by just saying that, you know, I think goals are number one. I think story is number one. And I think authenticity is really important.
That's great. Second to last question. How do you see the video industry like changing or evolving in the next handful of years? Because obviously media, moves fast.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any, does your gut tell you that video and media is going any interesting directions?
Yeah. So where is it going? I think formats will continue to fracture. So, you know, we have the 16:9, we have the 1x1, we have the 4x5. There's now a 2x1 format that's like custom geared towards like newer iPhones and newer smartphones. And I think the formats will continue to fracture. Something that's hot on my mind that scared me for a minute, I'm more comfortable with it now, is kind of seeing a lot of these what they call social video products. So there's Promo by Slidely, there's Waymark, there's a local Colorado brewed one called Verblio. Shout out to Verblio, they're great. And what they allow someone to do is to produce a video, usually geared in the 15-second to 30-second mark,
mm-hmm.
To produce video, usually geared towards their social channels, and produce it in a way that somebody can produce a website like they would if they were using Squarespace. And, you know, at first I was scared, like, oh, wow, these folks, these products are going to eat our lunch. And then I thought, well, let's just eat lunch with them. Like, again, it's about that funnel, and what they're able to produce using those tools is not necessarily what we're able to produce with our tools.
Right.
But if we use those same tools, we can still help that software manufacturer or that food and beverage manufacturer produce that kind of content and produce it at a lower price point and take that off of their plate so that their team doesn't feel like they have to fumble with these tools and make these, you know, Squarespace videos. We can do them and hopefully bring it in at a price point under $1,000, and just start baking a lot of video cupcakes, mm-hmm. and not always the 3-tier, 4-tier, 5-tier wedding cakes, and that's okay. And then maybe we're producing it not always with our top tier video talent. Maybe I'm doing one. My skills are a little rusty as I've been focused on biz dev. So, but whether it's me or Conan, who's on our team as a digital marketer, or others on our team that are not proficient with all of the video skills. But at the end of the day, I'd say, I think there's an expansion of the amount and types of video content that we'll see, but nothing's going to replace one's ability to really have the time and focus and resources to produce quality, top-of-the-funnel content that has good story, good messaging, good production. That's going to be hard for somebody to produce with their phone, to produce with just a software tool. They're really going to need to have skills, and I think that there will always still be a place for high-end production content for qualified large companies that need that to stand out in the marketplace, especially if we're more and more going from 60 to 70 to 80 plus percent video on social and web. Like, how are we going to stand out? And I think in the future, companies like V3 Media and others will stand out by the fact that they are able to produce that high quality content that stands out.
I love it. I mean, creativity, I think, will continue to be the variable.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Robots will take many jobs and software will mm-hmm. do many things, but I feel like it can't replicate like a human's creative ability to look at something that's been done a certain way and think like, you know what, I think it could be done differently.
Mm-hmm.
And by switching this and this and this, like, it could probably be done in a way that stands out a little more. So
yeah.
I love that. There is like 1,000 questions that I could ask, which means that we should go to lunch more often we work down the hall from each other.
Sounds good. I'll buy.
Most of the people listening to the show are business owners, people that are working on starting things or building things into their dream job and dream business. What would be some advice that you would have or that you would give to other business owners?
If I was to go back 10 years, I would say I think my top tip is try not to have to put yourself in a position to invent your own playbook. There are playbooks that exist. I had to invent my own playbook because I didn't know otherwise. I didn't have good mentorship, which, by the way, if you don't have a good mentor, find a good mentor, if not two or three. Mentorship is number one, whether you're 16, 18, 28, 48. If you can find great mentorship, I think that's essential. But when I talk about the playbook, it's if I'm going to start a cupcake shop or I'm going to start a video company, if that's my goal, what happens when, if we work for that company for a year or two and see how do they sell their product, how do they manufacture their product, whether it's video or cupcakes or beer, like there are a lot of entrepreneurs that surround us that just get out of school or transition out of a position at a company and they just go ahead and start their business. And I think that they end up, unfortunately, wasting a lot of time with challenges that it would be nice if they didn't have to have or if I didn't have to have. And I would say if you are in a position and you know what the kind of business is that you want to start and you can work for a business like that for a year just to understand, like, how do they pitch? How do they sell? How do they invoice? How do they manufacture? I think, you know, being able to grab key points from other people's playbooks and not have to invent one yourself would be my number one tip.
Hmm. That's great. It's great because it's different. I think there's so much value in, like, telling everybody to jump off and go and pursue your dreams, and you're going to learn a lot. But
please do.
You also will learn a lot from taking a little bit of time to learn from others.
So, I believe so.
Yeah, I've been in business a lot less than you, but I've spent too much of a percentage of my time trying to think, like just trying to figure it out on my own.
What project management system do I use? What bookkeeping system? And now I'm on my second or third one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I just officially hired a business coach, Therese, in the last like 5 months. And it was immediately like, this is the number one thing I should have done, like right when I started. Yeah. Like I should have put this into the budget day one of the business to have like a business coach and somebody that can help guide that path.
Yeah, super important. Yeah,
it's interesting.
Super valuable.
Well, thank you so much for your insight. I think this will be helpful for the creative listeners listening, but also for just businesses and kind of, I think business owners are intimidated by the creative often. So I think giving some context into that will be really helpful. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of the Small Business Storytellers. I love this conversation with Logan because I feel like it helps us to understand how do we actually use video to grow our business. And I hope that it was helpful for you. The main takeaway that I just want to focus in on before we leave today is that videos are not enough without a plan. Logan talked about the funnel, he talked about the strategy, and we talked about this thing called the video baby. And I think it's so easy to hear everybody talk about the video, and we think that once we produce a video and get it out there, and even if we spend tens of thousands of dollars on a video and get it out there, that it will change our business. And a video in and of itself is not enough. You need a strategy and a plan. And so I encourage you in your business to not just be excited for video, but to be excited for the strategy of the video and to get in touch with some people that can help you understand how to use that video well. Because video can absolutely crush it. It can transform your business. So once again, thank you so much for listening. My name is Seth Silvers. I am here every single week with different business owners that we invite into our studio to talk about what we can learn from some of their successes and failures and challenges in their business. If you want to learn how to use your brand story, to use your stories to grow your business, I encourage you head over to our website at successwithstories.com/challenge and sign up for our 5-day email course. Over 5 days, you get to learn exactly how to use your brand story to grow your business. We'll be back here next week with another story, and I encourage you share this episode with somebody that you know. Share it with a business owner or share it with somebody that you know in the creative space. We love seeing your reviews, so thank you for the positive reviews. We will be back here next week with another episode of the Small Business Storytellers.